Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Jill.
How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I've recently gotten into, I have found a workout routine to get back into with some regularity.
Not the one where you think about working out?
Yes.
Oh,
correct.
Oh.
It's an actual like physical workout.
Oh my gosh. I feel like everyone's going to be very excited about this update.
Absolutely. And I mean, before pre-pandemic, I was like running a lot. I would run like 4 times a week. Because I just loved it. And then the pandemic happened and I was like, oh no, I'm going to like commit to letting myself go in every definition of the phrase. And then
you committed to surviving a pandemic.
By letting myself go. And I'm actually like, I'm okay with that. And yeah. I was actively okay with that. I was like, yeah, I've had grilled cheese 3 times this week for dinner. That's good for me.
So much calcium.
Yeah, exactly. But I do miss it, and not for any like physical health reasons. It's just so good for my anxiety, and I have missed it. So I'm back in like a workout routine that I love, and Josh and I invested in like a stationary bike, and we have a rower, which gave me like an inflated sense of I'm killing it. So that I went for a run this past weekend, and I have been so sore from that run. For 4 days that you could probably convince me I was in a car accident and I would believe you.
Yeah.
But anyway, other than that, like nothing else has changed. What about you? How are you?
We have had a really exciting couple days here. I've got one kid with a double ear infection and a sinus infection. And that child was home yesterday when I got a call from school. Said, hey. Your child has thrown up. They're in the office. Please come get them. And I was like, oh, okay, weird. Yeah, no. A lot of times you're like, yeah, I had a feeling. Not so
right.
This time.
Oh, that's a good point.
Right. Yeah. Like, took me completely off guard. And when I say I have so much to do this week, I don't know how to quantify it because I basically took 2.5 weeks off when I was in the depths of pneumonia.
Yeah. It was not PTO.
Right. What, you know, my side gig when I'm not doing this is doing presentations and webinars. Those are on like a scheduled date. You have a deadline. So yeah, great. I took 2.5 weeks off. But now like in a week, I have many things to.
Oh no. I hate that feeling.
It is. So I'm like, okay, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. I
Standard Jill.
I know, right? It's all good. I can do all the things. I go and I pick her up. And when I did not realize this, when your child is sick, they don't just like send them out to the lobby. They make you go in and talk to the nurse.
Oh.
The nurse at school, Mark and I frequently describe her as cranky.
The nurse?
Yeah, she's just, that's a nice way of putting it. She's cranky.
Put out by her choices.
Right. So I walk in and she's like, well, she threw up a lot. Sorry?
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Sorry, my child is ill?
Is a human person and that happens sometimes?
And then she hands me 2 black garbage bags. The first one she says, this is her coat. And I'm like, oh, okay. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Then she hands me the second one and she goes, here's her laptop. I hope it still works.
This is the nurse is just saying this to you?
Yes. And I was like, okay. And I was so, I just, you know how Kathleen Kelly says like in You've Got Mail about how people say things to her and she never knows how to respond. And it's just like, oh.
Wow.
Yes. That's what it was. Because I was like, I mean, in my head, I'm like, this is not her personal laptop, but the school district owned laptop. And I was literally like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? It's a vomit so it was covered laptop. Most of the vomit is on the laptop.
Okay, so if a vomit is on a laptop, it means it's in the laptop.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, thanks, because that's who I am. And we get home and I get everybody situated and I take a picture of the bag and I put it on my Instagram story. And I'm like, I do like a brief little recap. Here's what happens. And I'm like, what do I do with this? Because I genuinely.
What are you supposed to do
with it? It's not like you can rinse it. It's a laptop.
Right. Oh, God. I really like.
I love my friends. The number one answer was burn it.
Honestly, it's the only option.
Oh, yeah. Like 12 people, burn it. Just burn it. Who cares if it belongs to the school district? Burn that laptop. So I open it up and I kind of gingerly push some of the keys.
Oh, God. Wow. Brave.
They're squishy.
Enough.
Right. Okay. So I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. So I'm like, okay, first of all,
I've got chills.
The come to Jesus moment, if I was not the president of the PTO, I would have sent this laptop back to school in the bag as is with a note that says, you're right, I hope it works.
Yeah, 100%.
I have to have a relationship with these people. So I don't do that. I'm like, I'm going to call the school. Like, I don't know what to do. Uh-huh. So I get in the phone tree and they have a button that you can press for laptop and technology questions.
Just a quick cue for them.
I'm like, yeah, this is definitely a technology question. So I push the button, I get voicemail, and I just, you know, again, I briefly recap what has happened. 2 minutes, maybe 2 minutes goes by. I get a text from the librarian at the school she's so nice and kind. Aww. I love her.
Mm.
She's just one of those people, you know, who you meet her and she's so warm.
Yeah.
Yeah. She says, first, I hope the child is okay and feeling better. And this is not like, you know, horrible. Second, please do not worry about that laptop. Have her bring it to school in the garbage bag. We're going to discard it. She said, I'm tempted to tell you just to throw it away at your house, but I probably have to have like physical proof of it.
Some official, yeah.
Yeah, I said, yep, no problem, no problem. And so I texted her back and I was like, thank God, it's squishy.
Okay, I really don't love this description of a keyboard being squishy. It's really, I'm having a visceral reaction to it.
You know when someone chews out loud, like they're with their mouth open? Ew,
Jill,
that's
okay.
What it sound. That's what it sounded like.
I'm really glad to know that.
Yeah, you're welcome. So my phone rings and it's her and she's just dying laughing. The first thing she says to me is, squishy will never be the same to me ever, which I love because it's also what you said.
Yeah, I will never hear it differently now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you can't. So, you know, today is better than yesterday.
Good.
Hopefully my kid's going to come home with a brand new laptop. Brace yourselves. You're about to be so impressed. You know, my reaction to this came entirely because these are people I have to be in relationship with.
Yeah, and for
in
at community least another with. Year. Yeah.
Yes. So, and I have more kids coming, like the whole thing.
Oh, it's true.
Ties in so perfectly with our topic today, which is books about complicated family dynamics.
I cannot wait to talk about this.
I'm so excited. Like, stories about dysfunctional families are, like, as old as time. I mean,
right.
Greek mythology is littered with them.
Oh, wow. That's true.
Right?
Yes. The Greeks
today
are crazy.
Today, we're just going to talk books with, like, complicated family dynamics and share our favorites. But before we do that, like, I'm curious. Like, what are your general feels on fiction with family drama?
I find them to be – it's so interesting because – I'm shocked that we haven't taken the time to talk about this yet on the podcast, because so many of the books that we've read specifically deal with like generational family conflict and generational family dynamics in general. I'm thinking like, you know, The Daughters of Eerytown, The Kindest Lie, Revival Season, Red at the Bone, even like all these books that we've read their core is about family. And we've talked a lot about friendships in fiction, and we've talked a lot about like romance in fiction, but not a ton aside from the books by themselves about the way that family is being presented in books. And I think that something that is interesting to me about it is that books across genres handle it really differently. And I think that something too, again, I think people sleep on middle grade way too much, because middle grade has a lot of family dynamic stories.
Yes.
And paints them in ways that like are a little bit more overt, I would say, than even like adult fiction, because it's helping young people to recognize if something is unhealthy in their family relationship, and for parents who are reading it to know like, am I saying things that are incorrect to my kid? Could I have a better relationship with them? And I love family dynamics in fiction across the board. What about you?
Same. There is nothing more that I love nothing more than books with like tangled, difficult families. It's a moth to a flame. And honestly, the messier, the better. I definitely gravitate towards those with large families, you know, and families can be difficult. They can be frustrating and complicated and messy. Like no one's family is perfect, but the families, I feel like when you read about these relationships in books, I mean, it just sort of reminds you of how challenging it could be, you know, the drama and the beauty of complicated family relationships just feels really real to me. Like it mimics my actual life. And I find comfort in not the having figured it out, because that's not the point.
The point, exactly.
And I'm not sure it's possible, but just the journey of loving someone who sometimes drives you crazy, or taking on roles and burdens for any, you know, who knows why.
Right.
The idiosyncrasies we develop to stay in relationship to one another are fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And they are so often told in like a multi-perspective way. And I love that framing device.
Yeah.
So it's just a love, 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 love relationship for me.
Well, and something else too, I think it helps readers validate their family experiences by reading outside of their own family, because for better or worse, families can be, I'm thinking in terms of people who have like difficult relationships with their families and perhaps some estrangement. I think that people who have chosen that for them can feel gaslit by family who are like, you know, family's first, family loyalty, like blood is thicker than water nonsense, when they're really just looking out for their own mental health. And then fiction can show them like and nonfiction. I mean, I think that Dancing with the Octopus was a great example of how fiction gets complicated feelings about family, right? Through like, this was memoir, and I've read very similar experiences in fiction. And I think it shows people like your experience with your family is valid, and how you are choosing to handle it isn't necessarily wrong or right, but it is what you needed.
Oh, absolutely. We touched on this briefly when we read Dancing with the Octopus, but like I don't have a relationship with my dad by choice. And there is something to be said for a book that nails a feeling or experience that you thought was exclusive to you, or you know it's not exclusive to you, but sometimes the feelings feel exclusive to you. And it just kind of makes you realize that you're not losing your mind. Like,
absolutely.
No, this is a thing that happens.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree. Speaking like generally, I would say one thing I notice and like pushback about stories like these, whether they're fiction or like biography, memoir, is that they sometimes feel like over the top, like not this all wouldn't happen to one person, or you wouldn't have this situation. And I wonder what your take is on that.
I think it depends on the story I'm choosing to read. I guess I would never blanket say that about anything that can and does happen in fiction.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I'm, of course that's true, but other times it just really depends on the confidence of the writer and if they're presenting it in a way that feels true within the confines of the story. One of the books I brought today is an extreme version of a family situation, but because of the way he presents it through the plot, you just believe it. And so I think that I honestly think it is just down to whether or not the story and the writing elevate the situation enough to make it believable or not. Because I definitely have read books where I'm just like, was that reaction really like, did that reaction make sense to what was happening? Or like, is this that bad? Or this was resolved way too easily. People got off way too easily, sort of thing. But the ones that are good for a reason. And I think it's because they are complicated, nuanced. Again, not to go back to, I know this is about fiction, but to go back to Dance with the Octopus, something that was, which is in season one, if anyone's interested, with Deborah Harding. Something that was interested was that, was the delicate way that it showed a version of abuse through family. Mm-hmm. It was, and it was very subtle and a subtle climb to it. Like it wasn't anything, one thing that was so explosive. It was just tiny, tiny big things over and over again throughout a lifetime. And that too is believable to me. So I think it truly just depends on the story itself.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like, you know, human beings are too complex to have like only blissful social interactions, especially with people you're related to. But I love that you use the word nuance, because I think the ones that do this well handle those intricate relationships with sensitivity and insight. And those are the ones that I find really grab me. And I mean, I will mine a book for nuance, a look, a tiny phrase, like, and it will lodge itself in my brain in ways that I have a hard time describing.
And I know we had, I would say just like mixed two positive feelings about Red at the Bone, but I do think that it was an interesting choice to start the book at a point where the main character's daughter is old enough to start to feel really angry about her parents. It wasn't, and then it went sort of moved backwards from there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's also, so it's also how it's presented. It's like, okay, either we see where it, like, we see that this is exactly how the character is feeling and why, versus, oh, this character is like, I think she was 15. The main character was like 15. The daughter was 15 or something.
I think about that, yeah.
And had a lot of animosity towards her parents and her, and the mother being really sensitive about it and not wanting to, like the roles felt reversed. Like, the daughter felt more like the parent in that situation, and the parent was being very delicate, not wanting to upset her. It's just also just interesting because books about family dynamics can explore how dynamics change in families.
Yes. And I think those are some of my favorite kind.
Me too.
So I have a theory, and I want you to tell me what you think about it. It's going to like maybe sound a little bit out there,
I hope.
Do you think that these types of books appeal to people who like to overthink things? Like, I love to overthink and like think about things from every angle and like, how did we get here, and replay the history and like walk through it in my mind. And I love fiction that does that too. And I just wonder, is it the overthinking piece?
Two things. One, I love that you say you love to overthink, because I am an overthinker, and it is like, it just has destroyed my life and will continue to. And two, I don't even know
if I'm the right... You say this so casually. It's destroyed my life, but it's fine.
I can't jump like several steps into the future and then panic about them and none of those things happen. So I've wasted 2 months of my life. And two, it's, I don't know. Because I am an overthinker too about everything, that I do think that maybe those tiny details or things that don't immediately look or seem like pieces of a puzzle end up being one,
yeah,
are really fun and fascinating to read about. But I don't know if someone who is an overthinker is the right person to answer that. You know what I mean? Like someone, yeah, who's like, c'est la vie about life should be telling us like, I hate these stories.
They could be.
Yeah.
I don't know any people like that.
Neither do I.
That's not true. I do know a couple.
Yeah, me too. I'm married to one. I think it's a good point though, because these kinds of stories are, they rely on, I guess, like multiple perspectives on a singular situation.
Yeah.
Because that's what makes them complicated. Because I'm thinking again of The Kind of Sly. Like all of the characters in that book had a different experience with what happened to Ruth.
Oh, you're right. Oh, I love that.
Anyway.
I think that's a really, I really feel like that's a profound insight. You know, we always talk about how people can experience or see or read the same thing,
yeah,
and have different takeaways. That's a really good example, you know, and
yeah,
like life is like that too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I've had, I mean, you and I have been there. Like we've had different perspectives on things and not known it until we talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of course we're going to do it with our families.
Oh, absolutely. I think if there's like a single takeaway from most to all of the books that fall into this category is that families are, you know, as varied as the people comprised in them.
Absolutely.
And there's like no one way for a family to be. And that piece I also speaks to me. All right. So I brought some picks today. Did you? What do you have?
So did I. Yes. Am I going first?
Yeah, you're going first. I love making you go first. Oh, and I am going to do my utmost best. I have restrained now on two occasions in our conversation to not talk about Little Women or Little Fires Everywhere.
Oh my gosh. I don't want to say proud of you, because I did expect to hear about Little Women because it is just interesting.
I mean, you know, I could have that conversation.
Yeah.
I'm going to refrain because I know other people don't want to talk about it every week like
yet
I do.
Yet again. Well, we will say like, we haven't forgotten it. We are very aware of the fact that it is like a great example of family dynamics. Mm-hmm. We've just talked a lot about it. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
My first one is called The Family Fang by Kevin Wilson. And it's a book I read in college. And it's kind of complicated. It's about Annie and Buster Fang, who are the adult children of, I think their names are Camille and Caleb Fang. And they are, Camille and Caleb are performance artists. And Annie and Buster's entire life have subjected them to participating in their performance art. And in really horrible, detrimental ways. I mean, very manipulative, awful situations they've put their kids in for the sake of art. Yeah. So cut to them as adults. It's told through both their perspectives as adults. Annie is a pretty successful actress. She's been nominated for an Academy Award. But she's recently had something of a breakdown on set because the director told her she was going to have to do a nude scene. And because of her, I would say, like, totally natural reaction to it, the media frames that as her being unstable. And her ex-boyfriend, who is a screenwriter, has been paid to write her out of the franchise that made her famous. So that's her story. And then through all of that, she ends up returning to her family home. Her brother Buster is a, I don't want to say failed writer, but he's like mediocre at best, and supplements his money by being a freelance journalist. And when he's on location for a story, I want to say Nebraska, he gets shot in the face and is in the hospital, and he can't pay his medical bills, so he also returns to his family home. And upon returning to their family home as adults, their parents instantly want them to participate in one final performance art piece. And as adults, they like really don't want to do it, and it sort of ends explosively and leads to Annie and Buster returning to the home with a letter from their parents saying that they're leaving and they're moving to North Carolina. And so without the parents around, Annie and Buster start taking care of themselves, and Annie decides, I'm going to pay for your medical bills because I can. And Buster is like, you really need to get sober. In this, they receive a call from the police saying that they're actually very concerned about their parents and that they are like very likely dead.
Oh.
They have very different reactions to this. Buster like instantly believes that this is true, and Annie is convinced it's part of another performance. And she sets out to expose them and find them alive so that she can prove them wrong.
What is the name of this book again?
The Family Thing.
I have to read this book.
Okay. Honestly, it is a book that I... First of all, Family Thing, you think it's going to be about vampires?
Yes.
And then I was like, oh, this isn't. And
were you reading this in your Twilight days?
This was post-Twilight. My post-Twilight era. I have since returned to it. And it's an example of kind of what we were talking about at the top, where it's like, could all of this happen? Like this is a very specific story. So, of course, like, for some people, it's going to seem outlandish, but this is a story about performance artists. It's very dryly funny and really emotional. And I think it offers a lot of insight onto what it means to have agency as an adult within a family that has been toxic your entire life.
Yeah.
I really love this book. And I think that part of it is because I think this is important to say. I'm pretty sure they're twins, Annie and Buster. If not, they're very close in age, but they are close. And it's because I think close and very different. And I think it's because you can't not have each other's backs forever having had a childhood the way that they did.
Yeah.
I mean, their parents manipulated them into both having, for art, both like being Romeo and Juliet in their like play in high school or middle school or something. Mm-hmm. And like abandoning them like in places for art and, but like, you know, loving them, of course, like blah, blah, blah. Is just an interesting in a side of family dynamics I'd never read before.
It's so fascinating. And it reminds me of, you know, those like YouTubers or bloggers who are like showing their whole family all the time. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like that. Like, I totally believe this setup because we see it happening in real time.
Yes.
And we always kind of wonder, you know, like what's gonna happen to those kids in the future.
Right. And just the different ways that they've like, you know, Buster's a little bit more, I don't want to even say sympathetic, but he's less to believe the worst in them. And Annie's very quick to be like, no, this is a lie. And he's like, our parents are likely dead. And your first reaction is that they're not actually dead. Feels weird. But to her, it's like, I think it's weird that you don't think that this isn't a setup.
I love it.
Yeah.
I already want to know the answer, so.
I know,
but don't tell me.
Yeah, of course not.
Do we find out the answer?
Yes, you do. Yes, there is a sense of.
It's not like vague, like, no. What do you think happened?
Right, absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
That's my first one. What have you got for me?
That's a mystery I definitely need an answer to. My first one is a book I read and talked about last season. It's called Malibu Rising.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had no idea this. Oh, of course I did. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, by Taylor Jenkins Reid. You know, when I'm not confusing her with another author, and you can go back and listen to our Deep Dives episode from season 2 if you want to hear that whole embarrassing story. I love Taylor Jenkins Reid. I took a deep dive on her. She was one of my authors. But this one hits home, I think, if you can relate to the sibling dynamic in which, you have to be the quote unquote adult because a parent or your parents aren't present or aren't capable, or a situation where you have a sibling who just like takes up so much oxygen.
Yeah.
Everybody else is a side player in the play that is their life. Or you get shoved into the role of just being the easygoing one, or the one who's never allowed to be serious, or like any of these stereotypes. It's also got an estranged dad, maternal abandonment, sibling adoption, romantic betrayal. It's got all the things.
Yeah.
But basically, in short, the way it is set up is you go through 24 hours in the main character Nina's life. She's hosting the annual end of the summer party. And at the end of the summer, like everything in at the end of the book, which is also the beginning, everything implodes and literally her house burns down. Like she burns, everything burns to the ground. But as you piece together the 24 hours, you can kind of see all these pieces coming to a head, and then it's told from multi perspectives. So I, you know, I really loved it. It, I think, got, I think people liked it, but it also got a little bit mixed reviews. She's the author of The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. This book is a lot different than that in some ways, but similar in others. And I think maybe people were expecting.
Sure. Unfairly, I'd say.
Yeah, I really liked it. I read this one first. I don't know if that impacts it.
I think it does, but I also think it's okay. People, and myself included, I do this all the time, have we accidentally peg an author's book against their own work all of the time.
Yeah.
And which is like just an unbelievable like lose-lose for them, where it's like if it's exactly the same as the last one, then we complain that we've already read it before. But if it's not enough like the last one, then it's not as good as the other one. Which I also think like it's fair that one is better than the other, but it doesn't make the other one bad.
No, I'm almost at the point where I just want to be like, don't tell me who wrote it. I just want to consume it.
I would love that, except for when it's like a problematic.
Right? Or you want to give credit? Like, yeah, it's so hard. I don't know how to handle it.
I had no idea that it took place in just 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's really hard to do.
There are flashbacks and flash forwards, but the main arc of the story is 24 hours.
That reminds me of a book called, did you ever read The Almost Moon by Alice Siebold? She wrote The Lovely Bones.
I did read The Lovely Bones.
Which
when everyone else did.
Every single person on planet Earth read it. Which takes place over many years. And The Almost Moon takes place, I think, less than 24 hours. And it was one of the first books I read that did that. It's lesser known, not as many people like it. It's not as good, but I liked it a lot. Anyway, it's not one of my picks. But it is an interesting family dynamic story.
What's your next pick? Something you did like. Something that is your pick.
I just finished this yesterday. Persuasion by Jane Austen.
Oh, so good.
My first time reading it.
Oh.
And I mean, like, it's a classic, so I'm sure many of you know what it's about. But, like, at its center, it's about Anne Elliot, who is the middle child of Sir Walter Elliot, who is a widowed gentleman with a great love of appearance and decorum. And when Anne is 19, she is engaged to someone named Captain Wentworth, and between her father and the family friend Lady Russell, they persuade her not to go forward with it because they don't see it as like a good match, and he's like not good enough for her. So anyway, all of that happens off the book. Like, that's before the story starts. The story starts with Anne is 27 through various, you know, happenstances. Captain Wentworth is back in her life, and it's really like it's been almost a decade. They don't seem to know each other really well anymore. A lot of like glances, that are being read or misread, and just being the most delightful character of all time. She is just so sweet, and everyone loves her except for her. I mean, I think they love her, but they're so mean to her, her family. And there are a lot of reasons why I really loved this book. The main one being that I just think Anne is so sure of herself in a really quiet way. She's so sure of herself that it doesn't really matter to her whether or not other people know that. And she, you know, her older sister Elizabeth is very similar to their father, and they really see things as surface level. Like, if people are attractive, is if they're worthy of being around. And her younger sister Mary is really silly. She always thinks she's sick, and I'm like, okay, same girl. Like, I get it. But you have got to calm down and stop being so jealous if you're not a part of every single family event or gathering. And I think it just showed, like, kind of what you were saying just now about, like, people taking on certain characteristics in a family to sort of, like, almost keep the peace. And Anne is really, in a lot of ways, like, your typical middle child, but also, like, is the glue to all of them, because she doesn't complain. She sees things for how they actually are, and ultimately is really, like, deserving of the love that she really wants. And I think that it is a great example of, like, approaching your family and family by choice. Leda Russell is a family friend, and telling them, you were wrong about this, and it did have, like, a negative effect on my life, and this is how you were wrong, is not an easy thing to do with family.
No.
But she's such a kind and generous person that I think people, when she decides to do that, they really take a step back and decide, like, how have I negatively affected this person's life who absolutely deserved happiness almost a decade ago? Which is also, I think, just something that is very unique of Jane Austen's work across the board is, yes, there are these love stories, friendship abounds, but there's always this really complicated exploration of family and how they are helping you or holding you back.
I love Persuasion. It's not my favorite of Jane Austen's, but it's, I mean, gosh, it's up there.
What is your favorite, would you say?
Sense and Sensibility.
I did like it better. I did like Sense and Sensibility better than Persuasion.
Yeah, I think a lot of people pick Pride and Prejudice, which I love
also.
But for me, it's Sense and Sensibility. But what all of them have in common is that thing we were talking about, the nuance, like the looks and the glances, right. and you know, mixed couples were together in never alone, always in a public situation, right. In these really contrived circumstances. And so what you have to read into every single thing that happens when you're interacting with a person,
right.
You know, are they a match, are they not? It's just so, I don't know. It's fascinating to me.
Well, and to your
point, I'm glad I never had to operate like that.
That's literally what I was about to say, was that when people say, like, this isn't realistic, like, why are they so obsessed with, like, marriage and making a good match at a certain age? It's like, what else do they have to do? They are either reading, going to the theater, or, like, choosing to get married. Like, there was, like, no one's watching TV. We weren't like going to the movies. Like, of course, this was how they were.
Go for a walk or do some needlepoint.
Exactly. All they could think about and talk about was their connections with one another.
I agree. That's a good pick. I haven't read that one in a while. I feel like I want to go back and
it's a good one. It's really short too. It's only like 250 pages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She packs a lot in a small.
She does.
My next pick is two picks. I'm sorry.
I love it.
They're both memoirs. It's Somebody's Daughter by Ashley Ford, and Educated by Tara Westover.
Ooh.
Somebody's Daughter is a memoir by Ashley Ford, and it captures the familial impact of a relative, in this case her dad, being in the criminal justice system and eventually in jail. Which is, you know, it was not necessarily a shared experience. I think her dad was in jail for like 10 years. Mm. And so he was physically absent from her life. And when he got out of jail, it was like, hey, let's reconcile. And she was like, I don't know you.
Reconcile what? Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So it was a really, I thought that memoir was really an interesting look at a family dynamic that you maybe have less, I don't know, you just don't read about that a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I think I feel like everyone at this point has read Educated, but you know, that is Tara Westover's mm-hmm. memoir of succeeding and thriving in her adult life, despite the manipulations, paranoia, abuse of her fundamentalist family. And again, you know, growing up in a pack of, you know, doomsday preppers, isn't a super common experience. Yet both of these books kind of carry a common thread of like, we are the product of our upbringing and family, for better or for worse. Right. What's next?
Oh. Ah, you like, that's a great sleeve of a book.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think it's funny because Educated is pretty thick. I mean,
it's a big boy. Yeah.
But somebody's daughter. Very slim.
Wow.
And the books are not the same, but the parallels are so interesting. And I kept thinking, as I was reading Somebody's Daughter, I just kept thinking about Educated. And so in my mind, they're very linked.
I actually haven't read either of these. I've never read Educated.
I thought for the longest time I was the only person who hadn't, because I read it like 3 years ago. But I literally thought I was the last person who hadn't read it.
Well,
it makes me feel better.
That's what I'm here for. We need to do like a memoir nonfiction episode, because there's so many I want to read, but I just never prioritize them because I just my instinct is to read fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love a memoir.
Yeah.
But you know, I want all the juicy gossip.
That too, yeah. Oh, a celebrity memoir. I mean, we've discussed at great length how excited we are for Britney's emoji-laden memoir to be.
When Britney's book comes out, it's going to have to be a book club pick.
Period. Done.
You and I are going to have at least one entire episode talking about this book.
How insane would it be if we somehow managed to get her on the podcast?
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
We need to start the
campaign.
Then
it would have to be two episodes.
At least. No, it'll be a book club episode, and it would be Britney Part 1 and Britney Part 2. We're doing a three-parter.
At least.
Yeah.
It'd be a whole season. Season 4. The Britney Spears memoir.
We like dissect all of her lyrics. We like
22 episodes all about Britney Spears.
We read the script of Crossroads written by Shonda Rhimes.
Oh my gosh, that movie was written by Shonda Rhimes?
Yes, which is why I'm like, you haters have no idea. I was ahead of her my time. I loved that movie. Sure, does that have like a 10% Rotten Tomato score? Yeah, but I don't believe in that.
I have not seen it. I only heard just universally it was terrible.
Oh no. It is so fun. You have got to watch it.
All right. I did not know Shonda Rhimes was involved. And also, we are so close to Bridgerton. Like, I can't stand
it. So close. Like, weeks away.
Yes. I'm ready right now.
Me too.
All right. What's your next pick?
Okay. Well, before we go on, I meant to mention this about The Family Thing. I just want to give you a little, like, example as to, like, why I am the way I am. This is the book that I have of it, because I let a friend borrow it and they lost the cover.
Is that why you now take all the covers before let people have them?
Yes. And what was I supposed to do? Like, forgive them because my relationship with them is more important than my book? Duh. But I'm still mad about it. Was this almost a decade ago? Absolutely.
It might be time to let that go.
Oh, anyway. My last book is one that we talked at length about on the podcast. And so I recognize that, but we've never talked about it from the angle of the family aspect. And it is, and I'm looking at it right now because I forgot to grab it, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Because we talk, I mean, nice of pick. Course. Thank you. It's an incredible book. And again, if you want to know the synopsis, go back and listen to season one, episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, we literally won't stop talking about it.
We have. I think you and I spent a solid 30 minutes just talking about the cover of that book in one of our episodes.
Yeah, we've gotten much better about content, like moving along. Thanks to our producer notes, like stop talking, move on. But we have discussed and dissected so much about this book. Star witnessing firsthand racial bias and racism, and that being sort of the catalyst for her activism, and how she lives sort of what she would say is like a double life of the very privileged and white school that she goes to versus her sort of day-to-day life in the neighborhood that she lives in. And around all of that is family, and her family specifically. And I think it's an important note because it's such an unbelievable book. And part of it is because it just explores generationally how people have of color, how people of color have dealt with systemic racism, and how I think for understandable reasons, Star's parents are more protective of her than they are wanting to be angry about what happened, because they are concerned about Star. And Star is like, this is clearly has happened to you in your lifetime, is happening to me right now, and I can be part of the change, and you can too. And it's a great example of how books for young people are showing how young people can lead the way in their own families as well. And I think that it is one of the best things about this book, because I think Star's parents are what painted so realistically and have really realistic conversations as parents and show like they are truly just trying to do the best for their children. And what good parent wouldn't say the same thing?
Yeah. Have you read the sequel?
What's it called? Rose, something Rose? Concrete Rose?
Concrete Rose, yeah.
I have not read that yet.
Yeah, I bought it and I started it and I had to set it aside because I had deadlines. And I just realized I haven't gone back and finished it, but now I want to.
You know what we should do? Again, we should do a sequels episode where we talk all about sequels of books.
I love that. My last pick is a book that you suggested I read.
Oh.
It's My Ex-Life by Stephen McCauley.
I just let my sister-in-law borrow that without the cover.
Okay, so this book is about David and Julie. They used to be married, and then David came out of the closet. They divorced. Julie remarries and has a daughter named Mandy. At the time of the book, Mandy is 17 years old. Julie is in the process of divorcing her second husband, and Mandy goes behind Julie's back and invites David to their home kind of secretly to help her mom cope under the guise of him helping her apply to college because he's a college applications coach. When David arrives, he finds, you know, Julie's house is in need of repair, which is sort of a metaphor for her and their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's about reconnection and rediscovering yourself and charting a new path forward. And really, you know, family and home are what we choose.
Yeah.
What we make. And it's, I really like this one. It's has a lot less people involved than any of the other book, which I thought was why it was speaking to me, and I wanted to talk about it today because, you know, we always tell – I tend to think of these big random rambling
– yes.
Cast of characters, yes. And like shows like Parenthood. There's a million people.
Yeah, right, yes.
This is a microcosm of that. It's really just looking at three people and their interactions with one another and the world at large. And I just thought it was really interesting. The piece about reconnection, especially when things have happened that are nobody's fault. They're just things that have happened.
Yes.
And did they cause hurt? Yes.
Of course.
And it's still not anybody's fault. And so the reconciliation and the reconnection there, I thought was really interesting. And I liked that not only are the adults on this path of figuring out who they are, but the teenager is as well. And so you kind of see it from the perspective of multiple ages.
Yeah, generationally.
Yeah. So that's another one I really liked.
Something that I liked about the book, nothing was so explosive. Everything felt really like natural, a dissonance. And I never, like, sometimes when I'm reading a book that has a lot of conflict, or I'm expecting a lot of conflict, I get really anxious. And a part of me was expecting, like, a big blowout between the main two characters. They're like,
yeah.
And it never really happened. I mean, like, they definitely had some conflict and needed to work some stuff out, but it wasn't, love was always at the center of it, because they still had, like, deep affection and admiration for one another. And that was really lovely to see, because I think that sometimes we can exploit, ill feelings and then validate overreactions.
Yep.
Without remembering, like, once you say something in real life, you can't take it back. And I think that showing a good way, a healthy way to have conflict and compromise was something that I really loved about the book. And that there was, to your point, there was no, like, right answer, and people would do things that they definitely shouldn't be doing. I'm thinking the teenager, especially, like, her storyline is a hard one to read. But at the heart of it is all people looking out for one another and wanting the best for them, and a ton of humor. Like, the book is so funny.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny because I think I reached out to you for a recommendation and said, I need something super light, very funny. Yeah. And it is that.
Yes.
And yet it has depth.
Yes. And, like, there's something, you know, you want the book to end a certain way and you hope to God it does. But then, like, the pessimistic side of you is like, of course we're not going to end it that way. It's too perfect. Like, it's too happy. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't want to say anything, because in saying that, if you read it, it could be any one thing. So I'm not giving anything away by saying it is a happy ending. Yeah. And it was just, like, one of the experiences of being so thankful, so grateful that it was a happy ending. And I think part of it was because I read this at the beginning of the pandemic, and I was like, baby needs something light and happy, and that everyone's going to be happy in the end. And, like, because I would love to go to an Airbnb with a gay man and his ex-wife. Like, that sounds perfect.
That sounds amazing. Sign me up.
I love this book. It's a good pick, too, because it does show a combination of, like, family by blood and chosen family.
Yeah. It does a nice blending of the two.
Great. I love this. I love talking books about families.
I know. This has been fun.
It's always fun. Speaking of family, I hope yours continues to be on the mend. You guys have just had a rough month.
We really have. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. It's going to get better, though. You know, spring will come. We went a long time during the COVIDs with no illness, you know, thank goodness.
Yeah.
So it's just a weird, I don't know, I think it's just weird. It's all kind of congregated here, but spring is coming.
Yeah. Are you guys taking any trips or anything?
We are not going anywhere for spring break. Our Christmas break trip, we went over budget.
Oh, sure.
So we are staying home for spring break, but we will definitely, this summer, we will go and spend a week with my family and a week with Mark's family, and then we'll do our big end of the year trip.
Fun. Families. All right. Well, everyone, listen, if you have any books that tackle family dynamics in a really interesting way, please let us know. We love getting book recs from y'all. You can shoot us an email at info@bookitpod.com. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at bookitpod. Hit up our website at bookitpod.com and check out any of the books we talk about on this podcast at our bookshop affiliate link, bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod. Until next time.
See ya.
Doodles.
Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.